Hello, everybody. We are doing a chill Q&A hangout. If you would like to grow as an artist and you can't take an art class, we've got everything you need here at Art Prof: critiques, tutorials, professional development, and workshops. Guess what? There is some Art Prof mail that I would like to open because I'm horribly late with this one, which was sent from Mouser for Chinese New Year. And you can see here it says Year of the Dragon. Let's see what's in here. Actually, I have a bunch of mail things. I'm a little bit behind opening my mail. See what's in here. Okay, tactile art project. I'm not going to turn the other side because it has Mouser's address on it, but this is what we have. Oh, wow. Can everybody see the Braille that's on there? Oh my gosh, it's so beautiful. And then here's the other side to see that, but it's actually very beautiful in the light. And then I don't know if you guys can see, but it looks like a piece of architecture from what I can see. That is so lovely. I know I am so many months late, Mouser, but thank you so much for sending this to me. And guess what? There's another piece of mail from Mouser. I guess the post office is telling me that they care by telling me that they damaged the mail. And again, I'm trying to not show Mouser's mailing address here. And let's see what's in here. Ooh, look at this. Let's unfold that so everybody can see. Okay, so I think a lot of you probably recognize this Dr. Seuss piece. And if you guys look up close, you can see there is Braille all over this, which I'm assuming is the translation for this book. And now that I think about it, I don't think I've ever been sent hard copy Braille by somebody that I know. And this is just so lovely to have. Just rubbing my fingers against the texture is so lovely. And I believe there is a letter from Mouser. I just want to make sure there's nothing personal in here, information. Okay, so it says, "Dear friend, I'm glad you're reading this. Please use the postage paid envelope to mail something fun and tactile to me." Because I think this is a project that Mouser has been doing. So here's the note. You guys can see that. So I'm going to have to think of something to put inside. And you can see the letter also has Braille on this area as well. That is so cool. Oh, so it's called the Tactile Arts Post Project. Thank you so much, Mouser. I love getting Art Prof mail. I know not a lot of people send it to me, but it's just the coolest thing when people send me things. And guess what? I've got two from Sal DeVito sent me this one. And because I never check my mailbox, I'm getting the two of them right now. So let's see what Sal has. Again, I need to double check, make sure there's no personal information in here. Okay, here we go. There's a handwritten letter. I may not read that because, again, I don't want it to have personal information, but look at this. Oh, so these are prayer cards that Sal DeVito made, and he actually messaged me asking if it was okay for him to send these to me. And so this one is Saint Sebastian. This one is Padre Pio. I'm not religious, so I don't know specifically who the saints are, although I do know that Saint Sebastian had a problem with arrows. That's from art history. But we do have a really lovely handwritten note. And this one I'm not going to read out loud just because it's a personal note. And I don't know that Sal wanted this read out loud to everybody. But let's look at the other one. This is, again, another one from Sal. So let's open this. Let's see what's in here. Okay. I mean, I love handwritten notes, everybody. And if you want to send me some art prof mail, I'm always so happy to have that. Yes. Yeah, so Sal goes by the Italian DeVito. And so these are other prayer cards. And Sal, I'll read this one part. Sal says, I also did St. Catherine of Bologna because I think it is fitting for art prof to have a card of the patron saint of artists. All right. So this one is St. Francis of Assisi. And I went to Assisi. It's a little town in Italy. And this one is St. Maximilian Kolbe. Okay. And this is the one, St. Catherine of Bologna. And this is the one who said, make artists learn lessons from you and use their talents to the full. Well, thank you. I love this. This is just the nicest thing, everybody. So if you guys want to follow Sal on Instagram, I believe it's Sal DeVito Illustration. You can find him that way. Fantastic. All right. So that's finally our unboxing, which I have not been good enough. Now my webcam's not focusing. If I put my hand here, it usually does a little better, I think. Anyway, I might be blurry for a little while, but it will settle in. I thought last time I did this and it worked. Maybe if I do that. Oh, there we go. I guess I have to put it next to my hand. So anyway, everybody, we are doing a Q&A hangout because actually we were supposed to do a sculpt along with Deep Dee, but she had a last minute thing because you guys all know she's a fabulous actress and movie star. So you got me for today. But I thought what we could do today is maybe talk a little bit about some art prof news, what's happening with our programming, and of course, for all of you to pick my brain about any aspect of being an artist. So tell me in the chat, what's been on your mind this week? Are you annoyed that the Holbein oil pastels do not come wrapped in paper? And yes, that is true. I was so annoyed that I actually cut out pieces of paper and wrapped them around because I was like, what oil pastel doesn't come wrapped in paper? That just seemed like a really bad decision on the manufacturing part. And the pastels are fine, but that was a problem for me in terms of art supplies. So let me know in the chat what you would like to talk about and what's on your mind this week. But the first thing that I want to make sure everybody knows about is that you all watch this 30-minute video with my former RISD professor, Andrew Raftery. Now, if there's one video of ours that you watch, it's got to be this one. This, I think, is one of my favorite videos we've ever produced. And it took me a really long time to do, but I think it was well worth the wait. You get to hear him talk about his extraordinary watercolors. This is just a little slice of one of the watercolors. And I think what's really special about this video is that not only does he talk about the paintings themselves and how they were researched and put together, but he actually shows you his watercolor technique. And I find that in general, there are not a lot of videos where the artist gets interviewed and then you get to see their technique. I feel like most of the time, at least a lot of the contemporary art videos I've seen, it's the artist talking in the gallery and they don't actually sit down and really talk about, hey, I use a Kolinsky sable brush and I have this quill pen, which is very strong. And he gets really specific about his art supplies. And so I was very happy to be able to capture that. And tell me in the chat, who here has had the opportunity to see the video? who here has it on their watch list? And if you don't want to watch it, don't tell me, because I'm going to cry if you tell me you don't want to watch this video. But one of the things that I was very particular about with this video was the pacing is so different than what we typically do in some of our shorts. I mean, they're a minute. You don't have a ton of time to get a lot of information in there. But this video really stands out because it's very slowly paced. I edited it to be that way. And for me, that was really honoring Andrew's work, because if you hear him speak, everything he says has so much in it that I just could not edit a fast video of him talking about his process. And one thing that I tell people about him is that he really moves at a different pace than the rest of the world. Like, nobody moves at this pace. And I just love it. I love that I know when I see him, I'm not looking at my phone. I'm not in a rush to do things. It's like entering this portal where he exists with his extraordinary technique and research. And he's really not just an artist. He's a print scholar. I mean, I think about him as much as an art historian, as a studio artist. And so I hope all of you get a chance to see it. Title of the video, I think it has the word astonishing watercolors in it. If you just look up Art Prof Astonishing, you'll find it. Good. I'm so glad you guys will take the time to watch it, because it's a very special video that I'm very proud of, that we took so much time to put into it. Retrospective says, art supplies do you recommend having in an everyday art pencil case? I'm not the person to ask. You know why? I have a disgusting pencil case. If you want to see it, look up Art Prof pencil case, because Jordan has a really nice pencil case that's plastic and clear. Mine's disgusting. I never clean it. It's full of graphite. It's really bad. I need to get a new one. Whatever works. I don't think there's a particular case that's good for everybody. I just think whatever is the best fit for you. Oh, that's a good idea. I should link the video in the chat. Let me find that. It's the most recent uploaded video that we recently uploaded. Okay, so here it is. Watercolor. There it is. Take a look. That's the video of ours to watch. I mean, I hope you'll watch more than that one. Obviously, you're watching this one right now, but that is the video to watch, because, oh my God, it took forever to put together, because he talks a lot about history and talks about how he went into the RISD Museum collections. There's a lot of history in that video. And so I had to really make sure between the two of us that I had all the right information. He had to gather images from various places. And so just getting all the content put together was quite a bit of work. Creative Blob says, wondering, how do people find art communities and friends? I checked art centers, but it's mostly to access studios and workshops. I want to meet other printmakers to hang out and connect in real life. Well, I just got back from Southern Graphics Council Conference. That's the best way to go, but it's expensive. It's like $300 to go to the conference. It's only once a year. But the only reason I was able to go is because people here in the community pitched in to make that possible. So if you ever have the chance to go to that conference, definitely do that, because you're going to find everybody who does printmaking is going to be there. But it's true. I think in a lot of printmaking communities, it is about the shop and people have membership. You might look around, because at least when I was in Boston, there was an organization called Boston Printmakers. And that was a great group of people. They oftentimes had exhibitions and they would have these monthly meetings. And that was a nice way to socialize a little bit. So see if there's any local printmaking organizations, because if you live in a fairly large city. There probably is one. And we got some really nice comments about Andrew's video. I'm so glad all of you watched it. Ginger says he seems to speak and create extremely intentionally, very little on the willy-nilly, but in a really, really good way. He seems to be lovely. I mean, I can't even get into the depth of how indebted I feel to him, that he was somebody I met so early in my artistic life and who continues to influence and inspire me forever and ever. And yeah, like Dave says, image transfer process to avoid graphite smudging was interesting and daunting. I guess what I notice about his work is just the nuances upon nuances that he has such a sensitivity towards these minor things that a lot of us may not take the time to look at. And Glenn says, loved it. Like the slow pacing, it's actually really refreshing on YouTube. Loved it. Tambo is asking, what was he like as a teacher? He was very nurturing. You guys can probably tell he's got a really calm demeanor, but he's also very dry and sarcastic, which is probably one of the reasons why he and I got along. But he gave us amazing technical notes. So this is before the internet. This is in 1998. I took his lithography class. Should see if I can dig these up, but he wrote this like novel. It was this very thick Xerox packet, and it was step-by-step instructions for how to do lithography. And just looking at that packet, my head exploded. Just it was like the densest packet I ever got in art school. And it even had his hand-drawn diagrams and everything. I should see if I can find it. I have no idea where I put that. I'll see if I can dig it out and I'll post some images for you guys. And Brian B is asking, is 2 years enough time to find your voice as a self-taught artist if you constantly created over that span? It really, really depends on the person. But I can tell you, and not just self-taught artists, I'm saying all artists in general, 2 years is a little blip. I think for a lot of people, I mean, obviously it depends on how much you're making stuff, but I know for me, it was at least probably 10 years that I mean, when I started studying, I'm not counting like high school or anything like that, but for me, I really didn't feel like I knew who I was until about 10 years into my practice as an artist. So I would just say, don't be in a rush to find your voice. You will find it. It's just, I know there's a lot of people, they feel pressure to be a certain person with your voice and style established. But the thing about all those things is it takes a really long time. You can't rush it. And you have to have so much patience. And as long as you have that and you're willing to let it emerge, then you will know that is truly your voice. Because I definitely have been around artists who they want to get ahead, I guess. And so they sort of force a style on themselves. It always ends up feeling quite contrived. Oh, yeah. Kendra's saying sometimes you can volunteer or present at the conference to get into that conference. So to present, usually you have to apply. You have to write something and do some application and everything, and you would have to be accepted. And Wings Me says, trying to build a portfolio for College of Creative Studies, but only started last week. Should I buy the BFA portfolio class or not? I think what you're asking about is our art school portfolios group, which I thought I had a slide for, but I guess I need to get on top of things more because apparently I am missing that slide. But the art school portfolios group is $30 to $40 a month. And you get tons of support from me in terms of written critiques, written feedback. And you also have access to voice sessions as well if you choose the $40 tier. But I would tell you start now because people who are starting now are really smart. to do that, and also will not be remotely as stressed as the people who don't seek out the feedback. You need feedback early. Don't wait until you've finished half your portfolio. So I would highly recommend you do that. So we have someone who's usually a lurker, Pagarami. Let me know, say in the chat, me, if you're a lurker, because I love seeing the new voices and it's fine to be shy. I encourage people to lurk, especially in the Discord, because a lot of people will tell me that they want to hang out with us in the Discord, but are oftentimes very intimidated to do that, which I totally understand. So what I tell people to do is to join and then just lurk. Don't feel any pressure that you need to start chatting immediately, because we don't want anybody to feel that way when they're in the Discord. Let me scroll up and make sure that I'm not missing anything. And I do have some goodies for you guys. I have some Andrew Raftery catalogs. In fact, I have three of them. So if you stick around, I'll show you what's inside these catalogs. Let's take some questions first, and then we'll get back to that. I like this comment from Turdidoff. Making stuff is getting lost. That's part of the process of being an artist. Meandering aimlessly, not really knowing if things are going to turn out, but I think that's okay. I think that is part of the process. And cool. We've got some lurkers here. Absolutely. Love that you guys are very briefly identifying yourselves, because I just love seeing the new names. It's really, really nice. And we also have Parvi. Are there any big art conferences on the West Coast that anyone recommends? None of them come to mind right now, and I really haven't done the research, but there's a bunch in New York that I want to go to. I really want to go to the Outsider Art Fair. Has anybody here been to that? Because there's just so many different types of art fairs. And quite frankly, I'm not really that excited about the big swanky, expensive gallery ones. Like, I guess I would go just to see what it's like. But in terms of my personal interest, I'm not as into those fairs. Although I could be wrong. I mean, I've never been one to before, but just from what I've seen, it's a lot of rich dealers and collectors, and you know, I'm sure it's about the art, but it's not really my scene. Like, I don't really like hanging out with people who are trying to impress each other so much. And Joseph says, I paint in three distinct styles influenced by Gottlieb, de Kooning, Rothko. I think I'm strong in each. How much do galleries demand one style? Will they accept consistency in three styles instead? There's so many different types of galleries, first of all. Local gallery, they probably will not be as stringent about that. But if you want to show at a big commercial gallery, number one, they're not going to want work that is identifiable as looking like those three artists. And number two, they don't want three styles. That's not going to fly. So in a gallery situation, you would be having, let's say at some point you'd have a solo show, like Lauren had a solo show at Half Gallery in New York City last spring, and her show did have that cohesion, but it did not seem like she was taking a lot from one artist. So what I would do, we do have a bunch of videos about how to get into art galleries. So if you just type into YouTube, Art Prof, how to get into an art gallery, you will find that video where we talk about those things. I like this. Brian, long time lurker. Awesome. Well, I'm so happy that you're here with us. Wings Me says, what qualifies as mixed media? Is it paint plus colored pencil? Oh, it's all kinds of things. You could make a painting in acrylic and drip wax over it. You could put plaster on some cardboard. You could glue a sheet of paper towel and paint it pink and crunch it up. And there's all kinds of things to do with it. So tell me in the chat, who here works in mixed media and likes it? And who here has no interest, which is fine. I mean, some people really prefer just one material. I was never that into it, but I discovered that when I do mixed media, I can fix a lot of mistakes. So oftentimes I will do a painting that is mostly acrylic ink, but then I'll use acrylic to fix up all the things that went wrong. And so for me, I don't know that I do mixed media because I want a particular look, but that I want more flexibility in terms of being able to fix something in the piece. By the way, everybody, remember, registration for our May and June workshops. This is due Friday. So you guys want to get in your registration now. So that way we know if we can run these workshops. Don't wait, because if we don't get enough people to register, that means we can't keep registration open. We do keep registration open if the workshop runs, but we need to get it to run first. So if you go down to the YouTube video description below, or just go to the front page of our website, artprof.org, you will find all of that workshop information. And remember, workshops are 2 weeks. You get to work with me. There's a live session, but actually the live session is just one little piece of it. A lot of it is the support and feedback that you would get the week before and the week after the live session. Okay. Brian is asking, do you have watercolor courses? We don't have a watercolor specific workshop right now. We just had one. Sorry, you just missed us. But there are a bunch of workshops where you could do watercolor. For example, the flower painting workshop. I would also say landscapes and water. That's another one that could be easily done in watercolor. Because the way I run the workshops is I give the option for people to do their own project if they have it. But if people really want me to structure something for them, I do create a workshop guide and provide all kinds of recommendations for how people can get started for the workshop. So you can come into the workshop and know nothing and not know what to do, and I'll just give you whatever you need to get going. And Edie's asking, is participation in an art fair a good return on investment, or are there more efficient ways to get patrons? Well, the thing about an art fair, I'm talking about the big contemporary ones, like Art Basel type of thing. I'm not talking about like a local art and craft fair. The thing is, you have to go through a gallery for those. Like, you can't just book a table at Art Basel. Doesn't happen. You have to do it through a gallery. And so it's more about your relationship with the gallery. And the return on investment, that has to do with the gallery. Like, for them, it depends. I mean, there are some galleries that are extremely profitable. And so I would just say that from the artist's point of view, that's not really something that sort of exists, because the gallery is the one actually participating. Now, the gallery, if they represent you, they may bring a couple of your pieces. If they don't represent you, maybe not. And so it's all coming down to that artist and gallery relationship. And we've got some great mixed media. Mystical Ren says, keeps me from getting blocked or bored. Lisa's asking, any suggestions for keeping my art energy smooth and positive for 4 hours? I normally art max 2 hours in a day. I can't do it for 4 hours. No way. I think for me, I'm the same way, Lisa. For me, I think 2 hours is the max. And then after that, it's just not efficient because I'm either half asleep or I'm tired. And none of those things are good when I'm trying to work. So tell me in the chat, what's your max amount of time that you can work on work? In the past, when I've gone to figure drawing, I feel like I could do 3 or 4 hours. But I think that's because it's such a specific rhythm. And you do have breaks, like when the model takes a break and stuff like that. But if it's my own studio practice, I'm done after 2 hours. And We also have lots of great comments about mixed media. Pagarami, 5 mixed media pieces for a show. And Glenn, first gallery show curator, helped me to pick that work that looked like it was part of a style. Yes, in a gallery situation, unless it's a very, very small gallery, they will typically have a gallery director. They may have a curator. It depends on the situation of the gallery. But it would be very rare that you would get to pick the work. The curator or the dealer would be the one who makes that final decision. Now, they probably would not make that decision without you, but they do have the final word. And so that's where a studio visit becomes very, very important. That is where they're thinking about giving you a show. Curator goes to your studio, talks to you about the work, and they decide if they want to show it. You know what's very sad, you guys? I had, oh my gosh, 3 studio visits with curators from the Cordova, which is a regional museum in Massachusetts. They hang fantastic shows. I had another one with the gallery director of the Boston Center for the Arts. They have a very big gallery there. And I had another one with one of the biggest art dealers in Boston. And guess what? Nobody picked me up. It's like so depressing. And a lot of these, I can't remember how I got the DeCordova ones. I feel like maybe I met some of the curators at some openings. The one with the big art dealer, that was a personal reference. That was somebody who set me up to do that, which is unfortunately the way most people get into art galleries. But I mean, that just hurts me because it's so hard to get a studio visit. And I got 5 and not a single one panned out. And it's just so depressing. Can you guys tell why I don't exhibit anymore? Or at least I don't try. I'm like, if people come to me, I'm like, yeah, I'll hang my work in MoMA. But other than that, I don't really have a lot of interest with that right now. And Brandon says, how is your digital art progressing? I struggle with digital art, wondering what helps you with it. I am the last person you want to ask about digital, Brandon, because I have no experience. But I can tell you that feedback is a really good thing to do, because you can watch all the tutorials in the world and get all that knowledge. But until you get feedback, it's very difficult to know how to progress. And we have lots of options for feedback. For example, the free version is if you go into our Discord, we do have critique channels where you can post your work for free. You do have to comment on 3 other artworks. We try to make sure it's a two-way street so people aren't just posting and leaving without commenting. But another great place to get feedback would be our Patreon group. So this is $20 a month, and I'm in there every single day, and I write very, very long critiques. And you also get to work with a small group of artists. And I know, obviously, not all of these options are the best fit for everybody, but I do really encourage that. Like, for example, right now, tell me in the chat, how many people here feel like they're trying to learn something, but are maybe a little stuck about how to proceed, or really feel frustrated, like you really just don't know what to do next? Because that's extremely common for a lot of artists. Like when you just create art in your own head by yourself, oh my gosh, like I couldn't do that. I would go insane if I had to work that way. I need that feedback. In fact, Andrew Raftery, he's the one I go to whenever I need like real feedback. I always talk to him about that. I mean, there's other people I talk to as well, but he's always the one that sort of validates things, because some of you probably have seen my Oma Bread watercolor painting, and I painted it without any intention. It just, the bread was there. I like that. I'll paint it. And the thing is, it got very popular on social media. It's like, why do people like this painting so much? It's just bread. And then I showed it to Andrew, and he said to me, I think that's one of the best paintings you've ever done. And I went, what? Because he's known me for so long. He's seen like all the paintings I've done. And that really woke me up. So I'm not saying that I didn't believe the other people who said they liked the painting, but because I know he knows me so well, it has a different degree of depth, having a comment like that from somebody like that. And Mukund Dagri, the art we create today does not seem to have longevity for hundreds of years. Is our art now considered disposable? I don't think so. I think it's just a matter of your art being in a place where it will be preserved for longevity. And so for a lot of artists, it's a museum, because museums have huge departments on conservation where they actively make sure that a painting is taken care of. I mean, there's a whole science to that in terms of the conservation of a piece. And the thing is that with digital art now, though, I don't think it's disposable. I just think it's different, because now art exists in a digital realm. So Brandon was just asking about digital art, and digital art, unless you print it out, in some cases just lives online. And that's okay. I mean, there's a lot of artwork that is like that. So guess what, everybody? I got some treats for you. So I don't know if people saw the short, but Kat and I went to Andrew's house tour, which was at the Southern Graphics Council conference. And in the short, we tour his upstairs. He has four rooms, and each room has handmade wallpaper. These are all prints installed into the bedrooms, and each room represents a different season. I can't remember which month this is, but I just love the flower arrangement here. It's just so perfectly coordinated. And people have been asking me a lot of questions about it. So guess what? I have a piece of his wallpaper. And of course, this one's all bent up because it actually, he mailed it to me. And so this is just a note you can see in the back. He just wrote me something. This is from 2019. Oh my gosh, that was like a really long time. So anyway, if you guys look up close, you can see how immensely detailed all of the sections are. And the thing to know about this is that every shape you see in this wallpaper, it's cut. These are all cut out shapes, and he cuts them out of ruby lith. I think it's a silk screening material. I could be wrong. I don't really have a lot of experience with silk screening, but every single piece of wallpaper is this big. And then he said he installs it into the home with wheat starch. So I totally forgot that I had this, but I found it when I was trying to find some of the other catalogs. Tell me in the chat, who here has wallpaper in their home? And do you hate it, or did you do it yourself? Because we don't have wallpaper in our home. And I grew up with wallpaper, hideous wallpaper in our dining room. But it's funny how when you grow up with something, it's like you memorize that image. And I just think that's the funny thing. It's like, even though that wallpaper was kind of hideous, like I still remember it. I guess it's just very nostalgic in a lot of cases. Wow, Null, 8 hours continuously. Oh yeah, I can't do that. I don't think I've ever been able to do that. Oh, I'm so glad you're here, Jeffrey. Let me know who here recently found us, let's say the past couple months, and who here has been here a long time. We have people who have been with us for like 7 years. It's extraordinary. Totally blows my mind. So anyway, I'm going to give you guys some work to look at. Okay, so this is a catalog that Andrew did of a series of engravings. This was a while ago, but so what a lot of artists will do is if they have an exhibition, they'll have something called an exhibition catalog. So that's what this is. And it basically is a book, and this one actually opens up. You can see some of these models that he makes. And so usually in an exhibition catalog, there's an essay where somebody writes about the work in the catalog. And so these are just some close-ups of some of his engravings. And I really like this catalog because he shows the process. So if you guys look up here, this at the top, this is in graphite. This part is also in graphite. This right here is a pen and ink wash study. This is an ink wash study. Another ink wash with lithography. This is the beginning of the engraving. And I gotta find the image of the engraving. It's in here somewhere. Actually, this engraving that you guys see, this is one little piece of one of the engravings. I actually have this print in my dining room. And it's really funny because my kids have grown up with it and they just always thought it was a pen drawing. But now they're old enough to understand, like, no, that's carved out of copper, which is truly incredible. Oh, here it is. Okay. So if I step back, you guys can see this is the full engraving. And it's very large, gigantic print. I think it's, oh God, I don't know, like 22 by 30. It's so big. And there's a crazy amount of detail in this engraving. So I love getting exhibition catalogs. It's so fun to see the catalog to accompany the exhibition, because what I really like about these is that usually there's an essay, but I know Andrew always writes an essay in each of these. And by the way, for those of you guys who saw the watercolor video, there is a link to his exhibition catalog digitally. So I do encourage you guys to look at that, because there's a lot of writing that's going on in there. And here's another one. This is the exact same project, but this one was at the Fleming Museum of Art. And so this is a particular exhibition, but isn't this cool that he adds these like work in progress images where you can see, actually he makes these models. And you know, what's really funny is I helped him cast those models a million years ago because he had these wax sculptures, but needed them to be more permanent. And so I cast them in liquid plastic with silicone molds. God, I have known him a really long time. But yeah, more preliminary stuff like up here. This is the sculptural model. Here we have the ink wash, and this is the beginning of the engraving. So yeah, a lot of catalogs. And I'm not going to get into this one because it's just really big. I'll make a reel about it. But this is an amazing one. This is about his ceramic dishes. And this is a beautiful book. I'll just show you guys really quickly. These are his ceramic dishes. They are all engravings, but he designed the whole thing. And it's all based on this garden and the lettuce, and it's amazing. So I'll do a reel so you guys can see the book a little bit better. Getting back to your questions, Jazz says, where to find collectors of weird art? If you could be more specific, Jazz, about what you mean by weird, that would be helpful, because that word can be interpreted in many ways. But I will say, if you're a collector, a wealthy, wealthy collector, I'm not talking about just somebody that buys art, chances are you're working with a gallery that helps identify pieces that you want. So it is one of those things where I'm sure they can look around, but probably the galleries hook them up with a lot of things. You know something, Wings? You're trying to learn oil paint, didn't realize how long it takes to dry. Get Liquin. Winsor & Newton makes it. Maybe there's other brands. I don't know that I know, though. But anyway, Winsor & Newton makes Liquin. And if you add it, it will dry pretty fast. Not as fast as acrylic, but it will definitely dry overnight. So you could try that. And okay, Parvi also frustrated with oil paint. Donnie says, opposite end, I'm learning how to use water-based oils for the first time and having a blast. That's awesome. We do have a video on water mixable oils. Actually, we have several, but there's one where I paint an orange still life. And that was the video where I tried it for the first time. So you see my real-time reaction to how I feel about water mixable oils. And Let's see what else is happening. Oh, yes, William Morris. If you guys want to see spectacular historical wallpapers, look up William Morris wallpaper. Oh, I love William Morris. He was a part of the arts and crafts movement in the U.S. Brian says, I plan to throw my own first solo exhibition. Fantastic. Will this hurt my resume when I approach a gallery later? What's some advice to making sure I can sell the work and to have a successful show? It's hard for me to give you concrete, specific advice because I don't know anything about the venue. I haven't seen your work, and I don't know all the factors that go into that. Here's the thing. You don't have to list it on your resume. I have all kinds of things that I've done but are not on my resume anymore because they are not relevant or they're not going to make me look good, as you say. But I don't think it's a deal breaker. I don't think people, unless you're trying to woo like a really big time New York City gallery, like if you're showing with a local gallery, it's probably fine. But if you're in a high cooker pressure New York City situation, I would say probably, yeah, you would want to weed out some of the things in your resume. And we also have Willis found us a few months ago. And wow, 2019, Crystal says the past year, fantastic. Yeah, COVID was when people found us. I mean, I hate to say it, but COVID is what really put us on the map. Sort of a terrible reason for your business to increase, but that is basically what happened. Python is asking, I learned to paint with only oils, but I kind of want to use the unopened acrylics I have. What technique subject matter is helpful for learning the medium coming from oils? I would just paint the stuff you want to paint because the thing is, if you are painting something and you're bored, you're not going to learn. You have to be having some degree of fun, even if you're learning something new. For me, I really enjoyed painting just really simple still lives because I was somebody who really struggled with oil paint. I really was not very good with it for a long time. Like, I'm not saying I wasn't good for a few months. I mean, like years, I was not good at it. And for me, when it started to make sense was when I had a professor who had us paint these very simple still lives. They were complementary color still lives. So he would have red objects with green objects. And that was just groundbreaking for me. And I think it's because the still life was so simple. I wasn't trying to have a big opinion or anything. It just really helped me focus on just the properties of the supply. Like if I tried to do a really complicated image or tried to make some kind of statement, I wouldn't be thinking about the materials. And so that's what helped me. But of course, paint whatever you think will be fun. Timmy, 2 months ago, found us. Yes, they're engravings. You guys don't understand like the depth of, oh my God. I mean, really for real, I think he's like Durer. He's like contemporary Durer. Like that's the degree of, oh my gosh, it's amazing. I have to go shoot some more stuff because apparently you guys all want a video on how he makes his handmade pastels, which by the way, he said yes to. So that is on my agenda when I get back to the East Coast. And we also have Glenn asking, what do you think of pigments with low tinting strength? I've recently become interested in them. I'm messing around with earth green. Andrew mentioned earth green in your video. I really don't think I've done that much because actually in the video, when he talks about transparency, I think he said the only opaque color he had was Venetian red. That it just never occurred to me. I know that sounds so dumb. Like when I think about the nuance with which he talks about color, I'm like, oh, I'm such an idiot. But I would like to try that because guess what, you guys? You want to see it's on my shelf? Hang on, I'll be right back. I do have these Daniel Smith watercolors that Jess sent me, and I'm very excited because I've never used these before, even though everybody tells me about how amazing they are. And I have to look at what's in here. I don't know which is transparent, but I'm thinking about it. And that's the important thing. Amanda's asking, what specific class did you take where Andrew was a teacher, a certain printmaking class? So I had him multiple times. I took three classes. The first time it was a required class because I was a sophomore first semester in the painting department, and they had these required classes. So you had to take painting one, drawing one, and some other thing that I can't remember. But he taught the drawing one class. And so that was actually his first semester as a full-time professor. So he was just at the beginning of his teaching career. And I was kind of having a meltdown at the time because I was in the painting department, but it was really not a good fit for me. I felt so aimless, and that ended up being a really bad fit. So that's why eventually I switched over to illustration. But then the other class I took was a winter session class on portrait painting. And then my last semester, senior year, I was able to get into a lithography class, which was fantastic. And I know you guys are going to ask me for a lithography tutorial. And I did recently shoot that video with Carolyn Muscat. She's the litho queen. I love her to death. She's the nicest person. And she does have her own litho shop in Boston. So you guys want to send me there, I'll shoot it. I've all these things I want to do. It's all a matter of budget to get me out there. But how fun would that be? Because I did that Mocolito lithography video. That's the one I shot at the conference. But because it was a demo, I couldn't like get in and really get things explained. But if I were to go shoot at, say, Carolyn's studio or something like that, I could like really shoot it, which would be so fun. Because there's not a lot of content online about how those techniques work. And Willis says, how do you sell your AI prints? You would sell it any other way. You might sell, say, digital artwork, but I will tell you there is a lot of pushback, in my opinion, which is good, at people selling or making gigs into AI. Like I actually saw that a lot of magazines are now starting to use AI to replace artists because it costs nothing. So I would just say, if you do decide to sell AI stuff, you have to be a little careful about that because I know it's sort of touchy for a lot of people. It's totally new territory. Like I don't think anybody knows how that works just yet. And there's a lot of copyright issues because as you guys probably know, those AI images, they're scraped from artists' images online. And to me, that's a pretty big copyright violation, even though the companies are just doing it. Legislation has not caught up with what's happening. So I would just be conscious of that. It's not really the same thing as selling, let's say, a painting or a digital piece that you painted. Jen says, I'm frustrated with watercolors. How do people learn all the pigments so well? Honestly, I think it's time and experience. Learning colors and what their characters are like, you have to spend a long time working with them. And I do recommend having a smaller palette because let's say you have four blues on your palette. You're not going to get to know them as well as if you had two blues, because with two blues, you're really going to get to know them. It's sort of like, you know, really nice close friends, you know? But if you hang out with seven blues, like you can't get to know anybody very well because they're all there. And so I would encourage, if you're having trouble trying to really learn the colors, cut back on your number of paints that are on the surface. And Crystal is asking, do I have to sell my art if it's shown in a gallery or other art spaces? I don't necessarily want to sell my art right now. No, you never have to sell your art unless you want to. And there are actually a lot of people tell me, I find this frustrating, that they get pressure from people saying, you should sell this. Oh, this would sell so well. And it's like, I'll make that decision, not you. And I think sometimes people think it's a compliment. They think if they tell you, oh, you should sell this, that it's a compliment. And I understand that, you know, I don't know that they're trying to be malicious or anything like that. But I have talked to artists who have told me, oh my gosh, it makes me so mad that everybody's always telling me I should sell my work, because it's a very personal decision. And if you're happy showing in spaces wherever I think is a good place for you to share your work, that's great. Don't let anyone tell you you have to sell your work. By the way, everybody, remember that we do have a Patreon group, and we also have Open Studios Club. That is a free session for all Discord members. So you guys are going to want to check that out, because wow, that is 2 free hours where you get to get feedback from me. And that's a pretty good deal if you ask me. And right now the group is not gigantic, so you will get to speak to me quite a bit. And we also have Great. So we have other people providing lots of information. All right, Jen. Well, we'll see. I've never tried them before, so I will report back if they are worth the hype. Because you guys know I don't like Copics that much, and everybody's like, oh, Copics. I'm like, you know, that's great. That's fine. But I do feel like Copics have this like worship thing going on, at least online, the places that I've seen. And oh, thank you so much, Madison. Read your book, Learn, Create, and Teach in my art education class, working on a sculpture now. Yeah, you guys probably don't know because I did it a really long time ago, but I did self-publish a short book. You can read it in about an hour and a half. And it's just, actually, it's a precursor to Art Prof, because in the beginning, Art Prof was a column called Ask the Art Professor that I had what used to be the Huffington Post, now it's HuffPost, but that is available. You guys can get it off Amazon. The link is in the video description below if anybody is curious. Amanda says, found you after researching jelly plates, wanted to know if there's any issue with residue. Never found an answer, but was thrilled to find you guys. What is the issue with residue, Amy? Maybe I can answer it right now. And we also have a question from Ginger. If you're doing drawings in charcoal, do you switch and layer different strengths throughout the process, or is it common to just stick with one? I've seen some arguments to layer, but I am confused on how. I love layering in charcoal. And the way you can layer, I always start with vine charcoal, because vine charcoal is very light, very loose, it's super easy to erase. So it's great when you're doing something and you want to be able to get rid of it and draw it multiple times, which I always do. And then once I have that blocked out, I switch to compressed charcoal, because compressed charcoal will get a nice, rich, thick black that you literally cannot get with vine. Like vine is just inherently a lighter gray. And another part of layering is also drawing with your eraser. So your eraser becomes a drawing tool. I know people associate erasers with, oh, I made a mistake, let's erase it. But I love drawing with my eraser. I like drawing with my eraser with charcoal more than the charcoal itself, because it's just a great way to create tension and direction in your strokes. We do have a lot of videos on charcoal. So I would recommend going to our website, artprof.org, and you guys will go to the search bar and type whatever you want in there. That is the easiest way to use our website. Let's see what else people are talking about. 7A reports, the Copic Empire is on the decline thanks to more competition. Yeah, people sent me those Ohuhu markers, which are so affordable by comparison. Oh, Python says, Ohuhu and Arteza, all these companies coming out with budget art supplies are all selling the exact same products using a marketing tactic called white labeling. Never heard of that before. I'll have to take a look at it later. I confess, I'm not a big fan of Arteza. I feel like a lot of the stuff that I've used of theirs is a little bit thin. The thing about paints is that there's such a distinction between really good quality professional paints versus student grade or paints that are really inexpensive, to the point that I just was shocked that I painted with student paints for so long because they're so bad compared to the professional grade. I know that the professional grade is obviously more expensive, but in retrospect, a lot of my painting problems were because of the student grade paint, because the student grade paint was bad and it just created problems that I didn't have with the professional quality paint. Okay, so Amy is asking, there's an oil that is left on paper if it's just paper. Wondered if that oil is transferred to the paint the same way. Does that make sense? You can notice as the paper is left on the bare jelly plate. Left on the paper. It could be oil residue left over from the ink. I mean, it's possible maybe you didn't clean the jelly plate thoroughly. I mean, I would never leave a jelly plate on a sheet of paper. I always leave it in between two sheets of plastic so that way they don't attract dust, because that's a pretty easy thing to happen. Amy, if you want to let me know what kind of paint you're using, are you using like acrylics or printmaking ink or something like that? Sorry, you ask these questions and then I ask you more questions back. It's just, there's so many details to how all of this works. Creative Blob, trying to get better at lino cut, wondering if there's something I can use instead of linoleum to practice to save money. Use that soft cut stuff from Speedball. I can't remember which one is which, but you want the pink one. The pink one is really good. Never ever get the blue one. The blue one is horrific. There's another one that's sort of like a pale tan, and that one's good too. So pink or tan Speedball. It's either called Speedy Cut or Soft Cut. It's one of those, but that's way easier to cut than linoleum. And I recommend that to people a lot, that they try that first and then transition to the linoleum. Oh, okay. So Python explains, white labeling is when one factory makes one product and companies come up to that factory and say, hey, I'll pay you to put my label on these cheap supplies. It's all the factories. Oh, wow. I had no idea that they did that. I mean, I'm sort of not surprised that that does happen. Okay. So Amy's only using water-based paint. My guess would be, and by the way, you have to tell me what kind of water-based paint. Sorry, there's so many specifics with printmaking that make a really big difference, but you shouldn't be getting oil. I think that's a little odd that you would get that from the jelly plate. It could be that maybe some of the binder from your paint, you know, like sometimes you open a bottle of paint and some of the binder like squirts out before the actual paint. It could be something like that. Hard to tell, but you shouldn't be getting oil residue from the jelly plate itself. Acrylics. I'm going to guess it's that. I'm going to guess that it is binder that usually what happens is like the paint isn't like fully mixed all the way. I mean, all paints will have that. Like you open it, you get a little bit of oil in there. So that's probably what it is. I think the jelly plate itself is doing it. Yeah, sorry, I can't help you. I would have to like touch it and see it in person to know. But yeah, that's not typical. What I do recommend though is that you wash your jelly plates with baby wipes. Best thing to clean your jelly plates. I've tried other things and nothing works remotely as well as the baby wipes. All right, everybody, remember, 4 days to register for our May and June workshops. Flowers, acrylic painting, printmaking party for those of you who want to get started. This is a great workshop for that. Pen and ink, mixed media and collage, and landscapes with water. guess what, everybody? We're not doing a Discord chat today. You know why? I'm so tired. That's the reason. I'm sorry to be so boring, but that's it. I'm like, oh, burning both ends of the candle. So sorry, no Discord chat today, but we will do one on Sunday, because Sunday I am going to be testing the Daniel Smith watercolors. And so you guys can tune in on Sunday for that. Remember, we've got our Patreon group. This is a great casual place for you to get critiques from me, support with a small group of artists, and also access to weekly voice sessions with staff. Art Prof has services, artist calls, portfolio critiques, statement editing, personal art curriculums. We do have a podcast. It's available on Spotify and also on iTunes. And go to artprof.org. I spend so much time working on this website. I would like to know that people are using it. Use the search bar and subscribe to our channel for more tutorials, critiques, and business tips. Everybody, thank you so much for watching. I'll see you next time. Bye.